Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Hello, this is Griffin McElroy.
And this is wonderful.
Ho, 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 clump, clump, clump. Santa Claus up on the roof. What's he got for you? Come down the chimney. This is a new podcast episode. Wrapped it up in a big box. And I said, you don't need that. It's sound. And he
said, put the box to the left of the menorah, which is also lit right now because it is also Hanukkah.
Yeah, no, he brought us a Hanukkah podcast too. It's weird. Yeah,
seems like we shouldn't need Santa to bring us Hanukkah.
Well, he's more of like a sort of Amazon Zappos sort of delivery.
Drives around in an unmarked van.
Etsy. Yeah, he's doing all that. They're keeping him busy. And here's the episode for you, and it's the one that we hope you enjoy because it's holidays. Look around. You can't deny it anymore. It's holidays.
Yeah, it snuck up on me. It's next week.
Mm-hmm.
Hanukkah really took a lot of my attention.
Yeah, and we've been hitting Hanukkah real hard this year.
We've been hitting Hanukkah hard this year, and then I looked at the calendar and I said, oh, wait. Guess
Christmas
what's right
is also
around the corner.
Next week, yes. Henry's making out like a bandit. I don't hear any complaints from him.
I don't know how we return to a life that doesn't involve a present every day.
Every night, yeah.
But we'll have to figure it out.
My man is basically like a vampire with the amount of attention he applies to the setting of the sun. Because that is, that means it's Hanukkah time, baby.
Yeah.
Or as my small wonder, Smokey Robinson on that one cameo would call it, Chinooka. It's very powerful and very pure. If you have not seen that now viral tweet, it is a genuinely sweet story about Smokey Robinson, who there's a way he says the word Hanukkah that is altogether new, bold, and invigorating.
I want to give him the benefit of the doubt and assume that that was just a spelling he was not familiar with.
Sure, yeah.
But
it hits hard.
Pretty surprising.
Context clues, I think, would yeah. lead one in a certain way, but Smokey Robinson just barrels on through, and God bless him.
Yeah.
Do you have a small wonder?
I want to talk about that vaccine rollout.
That vaccine rollout, it's coming for you.
So,
but it's good to come for you.
So many like great pictures and videos of healthcare workers getting this vaccine,
yeah.
and people that are at very high risk of exposure getting this vaccine.
Yeah.
And it's a nice way to kind of close out this terrible year.
There was a video of like a man in like his mid 80s in London who was one of the first people to receive the vaccine in London. And he goes off on the best story ever. Like, yeah, I went in and they had me wait a while and they said, okay, come back here in a little bit. And so I went out for a lunch, or just a terrible sandwich. Like, he goes so deep on his like kind of okay day. And then he's like, yeah, and then I got it and it didn't really hurt. Like, you fucking rule, man.
I have noticed that a lot of, you know, the news media have been asking people to tell their story of getting the vaccine. And for anyone that has gotten a vaccine before, it is a, you know, 2-second process.
Yeah.
So I imagine he was told to expand.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Really just enjoyed that
process. Very pure. You go first this week. What do you, what's on deck?
So my first thing is inspired by a few recent discoveries. It is the abandoned water park.
Okay.
So months ago, when it first came on, HBO Max watched Class Action Park.
Right.
Enjoyed it. Very much, and then watched
mostly
it again.
Because of Chris Gethard,
yeah.
who is absolutely hysterical in that documentary.
He makes the whole thing.
Yeah,
like if he weren't in it, I don't know if I would recommend it so heavily.
Yes.
And then we watched it again when my parents came to town for Thanksgiving, and then we kind of stopped talking about it, and then one of my friend's husband posted another abandoned water park that he had been reading about called Ebenezer Flop and Slopper's Wonderful Water Slides.
Holy shit. What? One more time. Hit me again one more time with that.
Ebenezer Flop and Slopper's Wonderful Water Slides.
Flop and Sloppers? This sounds like a fucking joke name that we would come up with.
Thank you to my friends Amy and Patrick Dean for sharing this on social media so that I could find it. Not intentionally for me. They mentioned that they have been singing this around their house in the style of Alexander Hamilton.
That's really good.
I don't know if you had like abandoned artifacts in your area that people would explore. I remember hearing this about this a lot when I was like a teen, and there wasn't a lot you could do. Like friends would go find like old buildings and explore them.
Oh, sure. I mean, West Virginia, there's a very famous abandoned asylum in West Virginia that I think like all those like ghost hunter shows and the MTV Fear show, I forget what it was called. All went to. My brothers went to it one time. I was always too young whenever they were venturing out to it. But I mean, we always had just a bunch of pseudo abandoned stuff. Yeah. Like there was an Olympic pool that I think was like closed for a couple of years. So folks would just break in there and run all hither and yon.
Yeah. So we had in St. Louis, we had something called Wet Willies.
Okay.
Which was like 16 acres of land right near the Six Flags.
Okay.
Like right across the street, basically. And it was just one of those like big two concrete slide kind of places that just disappeared without a lot of fanfare and sat vacant for a long time. I was looking and I saw there was a proposal to annex the area and turn it into a large office building in 2009.
Yeah.
I don't know if that went through or not. But, I mean, that's the thing about a water park. Like, an old abandoned building you can knock down and put up another building. Like, a water park is a lot of real estate.
Yeah, sure.
And a lot of, like, construction that went into these very specific slides that you can't easily convert into, like, an Arby's, you know?
Spiritually also. Nobody wants to be in charge of the bulldozer that knocks over a big water what a fucking bummer that would be.
You know what's interesting? So, back to Ebenezer Flop and Slopper.
Please take me back there.
So I did some research on this water park. So this was in Oak Brook Terrace, Illinois, near the intersection of Route 38 and 83. So this was originally a gravel pit and then a landfill in the 50s and 60s, known familiarly in the community as Mount Trashmore.
Okay.
When the landfill reached ground level, it was covered in concrete and then left unused until the late 70s.
They built a water park on top of it?
Yeah, at which point, so this is the Robinette family that owned the Mount Trashmore. Mark Collar, who had a water slide in suburban Kansas City, was driving along the highway and saw the big hill and signed an agreement with the Robinette family to build two water slides on the property.
Okay.
The park's name came from a story Collar's brother-in-law had told him about meeting a man in Joplin, Missouri named Ebenezer Floppin.
Okay. So the slop they just kind of tossed on there for funsies.
Yeah, just to kind of keep the rhythm going.
Yeah.
You know? So the park opened in 1980 with two 800-foot concrete slides.
You say you've said that many times now, and I'm struggling with what that means exactly. Concrete water slides?
Yeah.
So you're just going down on concrete and water?
Well, so there's a rubber mat involved.
Okay, still shit.
This was true with Wet Willies, too. You would be given a mat when you entered the park, and it was your responsibility to hold on to that mat.
What fun! What fun! This babysitting project, this school home economics project you've given me, and you're saying if the rubber mat goes out from under me while I'm on the slide, then all my skin comes off?
Yes.
That's fun!
Yeah, so Ebenezer Flop and Slopper's wonderful water slides.
Oh my god, it's so every fucking time you say it, it's like the first time.
As I mentioned, opened in 1980. After 2 years, Collar sold the park, having paid for the installation costs. And then in the 80s, they added 5 additional slides, and the slides were lined with blue rubber foam.
Oh, baby's fucking participation trophy snowflakes.
Around 1987, they added, various, like, what they call in the Wikipedia entry, humps and bumps. And they incorporated the inner tube, and they renamed it Doc Rivers Roaring Rapids Water Park.
Oh, snore. Are you kidding me?
It closed in 1989. The site is still owned by the Robinettes, who operate a demolition business.
Huh.
Isn't that like, it must have sentimental value because they have the equipment to tear it down.
Yeah.
But it is still there vacant. From what I can tell, there's fully graffitied slides and trees growing through them. And it just is there. And they just spend all their time trying to keep people out.
I'm telling you, it's they get in the bulldozer, they drive up to the big fun water slides, and they say, I just can't do it. I just can't knock down this edifice of fun.
Gosh, I don't know if they made Ebenezer Flop and Sloppers t-shirts, but how great would that be?
Oh, I would.
Got to get on the eBay.
We have to get on the eBay.
I don't know if this is the reason for all of the demises of the water parks. I mean, there's a variety of reasons. Obviously, one is that they are incredibly dangerous.
Yeah, we joked about the Class Action Park references a water park / car park action park called Action Park in New Jersey.
In New Jersey, yeah.
That the documentary is fun because it's like, look at this hugely irresponsible place where all these, you know, weathered New Jerseyans and New Yorkers would come to risk their lives. And you're like, oh, that's fine. And then people do eventually, there are fatalities, and then the movie gets significantly less fun. But yeah, I have to imagine any water park that closes has something that happened.
Well, and the other thing that happened, and I'm intimately familiar with this because it really started in St. Louis, but Six Flags started using its own brand to have their own water parks.
Right, yeah.
So Hurricane Harbor started in 1995, and then in 1999, Six Flags St. Louis was the first Six Flags park to construct its own intra-park water attraction.
I feel like every place, for me, it was Kings Island. Kings Island had their own water park section.
Yeah, Six Flags purchased existing water parks. And then in St. Louis started building them attached to their own. So that may be part of the reason they closed too, as well, is that, like, you know, this big, huge chain that like had all these protocols and infrastructure in place opened. And if I'm a parent choosing which one to send my child to.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that, I don't know, there's tons of these all over the world. You can find online just these photos of these like relics. A particularly interesting one, Lady Dolores Water Park. They rebranded so many times and used it for various events like raves and skateboard competitions and just trying to find ways to reuse these slides.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's so great. Can I tell you about my first thing?
Yes.
I have a question for you first. Do you know anything about hackers? Like, can you jam with the console cowboys in cyberspace? Have you ever read Neuromancer? Ever experienced the new wave? Next wave? Dream wave? Or cyberpunk? I didn't think so.
I was not aware of this clip until I met you, by the way.
This segment's not about the clip. It's about the cyberpunk genre. But I do love that's Julia Stiles in Ghost Rider.
Yeah.
Just really giving in an amazing performance. Everybody talks about that quote. They don't talk about the thing that comes next, where they're like, how did you learn about this stuff, Julia Stiles? And she's like, in here, the internet, where they only judge you for your words and your thoughts and not what you look like. Like, wow, damn, Julia. So Cyberpunk, there's a game that just came out called Cyberpunk 2077. That is not my wonderful thing, because the game is on virtually every level an enormous mess. But it did remind me that I do enjoy this genre a lot. Although, like, mea culpa, I also recognize that there is a lot of sort of toxicity that came out of the cyberpunk genre, because it is largely about misanthropic dudes who become messianic figures because of their like computer know-how.
Yeah, that's a minefield right there.
That's a minefield right there. But there's a lot else about the genre, like its aesthetic and the concepts behind it and the reason why it sort of came about, that I find like really, really interesting. Have you ever read anything like, have you ever jammed with the console cowboys in there?
I don't know. There's a certain kind of like sci-fi that appeals to me, and that it does not fall in that category.
Yeah, it's interesting because cyberpunk was sort of created as a contrast to the sci-fi that had come about at that time. Like the big sci-fi works that you got from like Isaac Asimov, who did the iRobot series, and he did Foundation, which was this huge, no pun intended, like foundational space sci-fi series, and Dune, all of the many Dune books from Frank Herbert. But a lot of the times whenever sci-fi authors would write about the future, it was viewed through like a far future outer space lens, or through a somewhat like utopian lens. And cyberpunk was like, let's do the exact opposite, where it's on Earth, near future, dystopia.
Does The Matrix count as this?
The Matrix absolutely counts as this. Matrix was informed by a lot of these formative like cyberpunk works that I'm going to talk about, but also in a lot of ways like became a very important like cyberpunk work.
Yeah.
I think you don't get quite as much as the aesthetic of like the dystopian future world as much as you get that like weird robot apocalypse shit, but a lot of the concepts of like consciousness and that consciousness existing on the internet essentially is like super, super, super The Matrix. A lot of the concepts of cyberpunk are about how society is transformed through like unchecked technological developments, and how corporations can sort of seize those as a means of like taking control of literally every aspect of society, which is, I think, an exaggerated version of what's actually happening a little bit. Like, and so the protagonists in these stories are often these like anti-heroes who are rebelling against these systems that have like marginalized them and disenfranchised them and sort of concentrated power into the hands of people who have taken advantage of these like technological developments, which is where you get the punk in cyberpunk. It's like never a cool, like wealthy person who's like doing cool shit. It's always these punks who are trying to dismantle the system with their, you know, technological know-how. And the genre also leans a lot on like film noir and like detective fiction things, and deals with stuff that had been dealt with in other like older sci-fi things, like AI and like altered consciousness and post-humanism. But it does all that stuff through a lens of like, it's 50 years from now and it's in Earth and everything is super, super shitty. So the big inspirations for cyberpunk, there were two kind of big ones. Blade Runner, which was based, a film based on a Philip K. Dick short story. Have you ever seen Blade Runner? Either of them, I guess?
No, I haven't.
Man, they're fucking cool movies. I don't even love them a lot, but I think that they are so unique. And so like you watch them and see how it is the Bible for all of these different things that came after, and it's so rad. And as Ms. Stiles referenced, Neuromancer by William Gibson, who was actually working on that book when Blade Runner came out, and he was like, well, shit, everybody's going to think I copied Blade Runner.
Yeah.
And he almost didn't release the book. He was like, this is going to ruin me. Everybody's going to call me a plagiarist. So he rewrote the book like a dozen times until he came out with it, still thinking like, this is going to suck. And he put it up, and it became the like Rosetta Stone for all cyberpunk fiction that came after it.
Yeah.
Like to a weird extent where anything else you read will have terminology that William Gibson like established in Neuromancer. Things like flatline. Instead of things as small as that, instead of saying they died, they flatlined. Like cool cyberpunk shit like that is just everybody aped it. So much so that my favorite cyberpunk book is by Neal Stephenson, and it's called Snow Crash, which in a lot of ways is like a parody or like a what's the word? A satire on cyberpunk, because it goes so fucking wild in that direction. I saw somebody refer to it as like the Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, the way that those movies like have takes on genre, but at the same time are very much like entries in those genres. Like Snow Crash starts out with this like incredibly intense, bleak, like samurai street fight pizza delivery, which is like, okay, you got, I didn't recognize at the time when I first read it that this was like so intensely cyberpunk that it was kind of a joke. But man, I really like that book. But like all my like so many of my favorite stories, like the Matrix trilogy for sure, Akira, which is this like absolutely remarkable anime and manga series, is like super, super cyberpunk.
Oh, I didn't know that was cyberpunk.
Absolutely, sure. Johnny Mnemonic with Keanu Reeves. I don't know if you've ever seen that one. That movie's not great, but also a fucking trip. There's a movie that came out in 2018 called Upgrade that I really fucking dug. That was like almost a horror movie that is like super, super cyberpunk. I don't know. This is a weird thing, right? Because the stories often like don't actually do a lot for me because they are that like, I think there was something noble about it back when the genre was first coming out of this idea of just like, there are a lot of trends that we are seeing with regards to how power is concentrating around whoever can like seize the technological power of the day or take advantage of whatever new developments there are, which is for sure certainly still happening. And back then it was like, we're gonna fucking fight the system, man, because we're punks. And but then it kind of did turn into like, I'm a loner while you were hooking up with babes at parties, I was studying the blockchain. And
you know what, there's a lot about Mr. Robot that is inspired.
Absolutely there is.
Yeah,
it wasn't necessarily like aesthetically cyberpunk, but it was.
Yeah.
Here's one loner who's, you know.
He has the hacker skills to overthrow this
right.
disgusting monopoly.
That doesn't do a lot for me because of, I think, the type of person that it has informed.
Yeah.
But man, I don't know. Playing this cyberpunk game, which is a fucking disaster, but like the city looks so cool. Like the dystopias that they create are so weirdly alluring. Like I would never want to live in them because they seem like a genuine hellscape to be in. But watching Blade Runner and seeing like, oh fuck, that all looks so cool though. That all looks so rad. The aesthetic is like so up my alley.
I just pictured like a West Side Story scenario where steampunk and cyberpunk battle.
I mean, steampunk came out, like every blank punk that came out after that came like was a sort of like take on cyberpunk. Mm-hmm. It was like steampunk is we're gonna fight the system of people who have taken advantage of steam powered technology to seize control of the world. I guess you could do that with anything. Hydropunk is fucking cool. I just said that.
Yeah, that's a, we TM, have a, TM.
We got to fight the hydroelectric dam. I guess something like Waterworld is hydropunk.
Yeah.
It really is, actually, now that I'm saying that.
Yeah.
And then like Mad Max, it would kind of be hydropunk too, but it's more desert punk. I don't know. Anyway, hey, can I steal you right away?
Yes,
into
please.
The cyber future. Check in to the advertisements. Folks, I'm recording this ad by myself because Rachel, she did something totally wild. She hopped on her electric e-bike and she was like, I am out of here. And then she zoomed off. She hit a ramp and flew up in the sky like an E.T. movie and just went so fast that I was like, dang, where'd my wife even go? And she yelled from over the horizon on a bike adventure. And so I have to celebrate that. I have to cheer for her on that. This bike that Rachel got from Electric E-Bike, it is, one, very sleek and stylish. It looks fast, because it is. The battery lasts forever. It shows up at your door, ships for free. It's got a quick toolless assembly, and you can even fold it up for easy travel and storage. It is the perfect time of year to have a sweet little bike for yourself to go on your own bike adventures away from your husband. Anyway, go full throttle into spring with Electric E-Bikes, the number one selling e-bikes in the nation. Get your adventure started at electricebikes.com, and please mention that Wonderful sent you in the post-checkout survey. That's electricebikes.com. Oh, it's Jumbotron time, ain't it? Oh, check your clock. It's time for Bumbo Bombs. Here is a message for Leslie. It's from Allison, who says, we met when you decided to wear a Mabim Bam shirt to a Nicolas Cage-themed burlesque show. What an amazing way to start a friendship. I am so excited to visit you again the minute that Americans are allowed to back into Canada. I love our friendship, except for that time you told me about the Omegaverse. What the fuck, man? Love, Allison. That's delightful. Got a birthday coming up December 28th. So I celebrate that, And also, I feel like wearing a Mabim Bam shirt to a Nicolas Cage themed burlesque show is, I imagine everybody there was wearing Mabim Bam merch. Oh, that seems like our type of people.
So many Face Off references.
Absolutely, there are.
Can I read this next one?
Yeah, please.
This is for Alex. It is from Alex. Hi, Alex. This is you from the past to congratulate you on moving out and making your own life choices. Guess what? You're great. And chosen family is more important than blood family sometimes, and that's okay. Love from past Alex, and yes, there's a lot of Alexes, but this is from you, the one with stuffed animal named Bobo.
I mean, that's great and a beautiful message, but also, Alex, you got to think about the law of large numbers. There's a lot of Alexes out there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Alexes out there who have stuffed animals. The odds that another one of them doesn't have a Bobo are like nothing.
I like thinking about the line graph of Alex's where like, oh, this isn't me, but wait
it
still is.
And
wait,
it still is.
Did I do this? For those of you that are interested in doing personal messages in the new year, you can still enter the drawing. You have until December 29th to share your information and see if you can get a chance to get a personal message on Wonderful.
Yeah, go to MaximumFun.org/...
Jumbotron drawing.
Thank you, Rachel. Mm-hmm. And yeah, if your name gets picked, you can do a message for $100. And yeah, may the odds be ever in your favor.
Hey, I'm Janet Varney, host of the JV Club podcast. Ah, high school. Was it a time of adventure, romance, and discovery?
Class of 95, we did it!
Or a time of angst, disappointment, and confusion?
We're all tied together by 4 years of trauma at this place, but enjoy adulthood, I guess.
The truth is, it was both. So join me on the JV Club podcast, where I invite some great friends like Kristen Bell, Angela Kinsey, Oscar Nunez, Neil Patrick Harris, and Keegan-Michael Key to talk about high school, the good, the bad, and everything in between.
My teenage mood swings are getting harder to manage.
The JV Club. Find it on Maximum Fun.
What is your second thing?
My second thing is the tamale.
Oh, yes. Can I tell you something? We Central Market is a grocery store here in Austin that's like the fancy HEB. and they do holiday dinners. So you can just like reserve one, swing by the day before. We did it for Thanksgiving, so because we didn't want to mess with it. And they're doing one for Christmas. And so I did reserve a ham because we wanted to, it's just us for Christmas, but damn it, we can still have a big ham and some sides. And what I loved is one of the other options on there is like six different kinds of tamales. It's like, fuck yeah, Central Market. They know exactly what's up.
Did you do it?
I didn't. Well, we already have tamales in the fridge. If we want tamales, we can eat those tamales.
Yeah, but you know how many of those you can eat in one sitting?
Like 60.
Yeah.
Like a lot. Yeah, that's a good point.
Exactly.
Damn it, I should have. It's not too late. I can still do it. Ham and tamales? Ham and mashed potatoes and tamales?
I mean, we can have them at separate meals if that makes you uncomfortable.
You're right. Anyway, tamales.
So this is a Christmas holiday tradition that I was not familiar with until I moved down south. Are you?
I knew about it in Chicago because of the tamale guy.
That makes sense.
Did you ever get tamales from the tamale guy?
No, I think I just lived in a different part of town, and so I didn't have the access.
Literally, like, there was a bar, I can't remember the name of it. It was something like playing card based, like the Four Jacks or something like that, that we would go and do karaoke at sometimes. And literally every time I was there, he would roll up with his hot box of great, great ass tamales.
Yeah.
That when you're like, when you've had a couple drinks and it is negative 10 degrees outside, there is nothing better than a boiling hot little tinfoil wrapped tamale in your hands.
Tamales are a food item from the Latin tradition that vary a lot depending on where you're from. Most often it is just kind of a filling that is wrapped in a husk or a leaf and steamed.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that we're familiar with here in Texas have the masa.
That good masa.
And then they have the corn husk. But you can also, depending on where you're from, you can get it in a banana leaf.
Oh, interesting. The masa is basically just a thick-ass crumbly tortilla that isn't, like, fully set, basically.
Yeah, and it's a whole process.
Oh, so. For sure. That's why they make them 1,000 at a time, is because it would be a pain in the ass to do them, you know, a la carte.
Yeah, because you not only have to get the masa in shape, you have to get the filling in shape, then you have to like wrap them in the leaf, and then you have to steam them, and you can form a whole assembly line.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times this is something that families will gather together to do around the holidays, and they will make them in bulk, and they will eat them for a very long time and or share them with friends and other family members.
Yeah.
In Guatemala, you eat them at midnight on December 24th and the 31st.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's something you can find them here at the HEB. You can find them like frozen. But more often than not, people are looking, they're looking for that handmade. They're looking for the hookup around this time of year.
There's also a lot of just like on the street vendors here. I think Tamale Guy like stands out in Chicago because he's like a magical elf that can teleport all across town and hit every single bar in one night, much like Santa Claus does. But I mean, you wander around downtown here too, and you can very easily snatch one up.
Tamales originated in Mesoamerica as early as 8,000 BC.
Wow, that's a long time ago.
It makes sense, right? Like it's wrapped in a banana leaf or a corn husk, and you can carry it around. It's transportable.
Yeah.
It's
like Go-Gurt. It's like Mesoamerican Go-Gurt, if you think about it, but way better.
Is that how you just squeeze the bottom? Is that how you're eating?
Is that not how you're supposed to do it? You squeeze it out of the bottom like it's a push pop?
I will say there is also a version. Puerto Rican people will eat something called pasteles, which have no masa whatsoever.
It's just pure filling?
Yeah, it's a different combination of ground ingredients, but it's, you know, the same kind of...
I would go vehicle. For that. Yeah. I would need a dip for that, I feel like.
I think there's something like so delightful and surprising because of the way it is put together, you really have no idea kind of what you're going to experience.
Mm-hmm.
I have read a lot about, you know, people, I mean, obviously it varies so much family to family and region to region. And so everybody kind of bites into it, remembering the last time they had a tamale and deciding whether or not this is actually going to be the same experience.
There was a place we used to get like chicken mole tamales, which is just like a hat on a hat of just like food jazz, just like holy shit. The mole is like its own unique thing, and the very unique tamale that you've made too, and there's nothing like it in the whole world.
So tamale is an anglicized version of the Spanish word tamal. You know, when you pluralize it, you add the ES, and English speakers interpreted the E as part of the stem rather than the plural.
Oh, that sounds
so
like
that's
us.
Why we say tamale instead of tamal.
We done it again.
But yeah, this is a cool thing. Just like for me growing up, having those family meals were pretty much, you know, everybody's coming together, they're making food. It's an enormous meal and an enormous task, and kind of growing up with the same thing every year to find out about this tradition was very exciting.
Yeah, for sure.
And obviously to have the taste experience was just as good, if not better.
I'm going to add tamales to our order now. Because now if I don't eat tamales in the next like 10 days, I'm going to go berserk. Hey, can I tell you about my second thing?
Yes.
It's a music one. It's a band called Churches. And a lot of people see the name and they say Chiverches because there is a V in there, but the V is pronounced like a U, like you would see it like
in the old times,
like where you, I remember there's a building in Huntington, I think like the courthouse or something, that has like the inscription over the doorway with the V's for U's, and it always, like as a kid walking by it, I was like, fucking did it wrong. That's a V, guys. The U has the curve on the bottom, but nice try.
Somebody should clean up this town.
I've actually talked about them on the show before because they did a collaboration with Wednesday Campanella that I think I played on the show back when I did a segment on them. They are a Scottish synth pop group that just really checks all the boxes for the things I like about like pop music. They also, weirdly, I would say, kind of have cyberpunk vibes. Like, I think they did a song in Drive. I guess Drive wasn't cyberpunk, but it had that like 80s synth feel that like really reminds me of like Blade Runner. So they are a trio. There's Ian Cook, Martin Doherty, and Lauren Mayberry, who's like the front woman vocalist for the group. And Cook and Doherty started out playing in like bands all the way back in college, like a lot of them, but didn't have the sound that they liked until they bought like an old Moog synth from the 80s and started to mess around with sounds like that. They found Lauren Mayberry, who was the drummer and singer for like a rock group. So like this genre was nothing any of them had any experience with, but they like fell in love with it and got like really, really hardcore about like this band, even though they'd been in a bunch before, just because of the sound that they discovered, which I always like really think is the coolest. I imagine being in a band like that and having that excitement of like, oh, that sound, we finally found that sound. Lauren Mayberry was actually supposed to be the backing singer, but then the other two heard her sing and they were like, oh, never mind. You're in charge now. You're going to do the singing now. Her voice is like out of control, like super, super, super powerful.
Yeah.
And it kind of has to be because she's singing over these like very, let's say, assertive 80s synths. And the name Churches, they all just like liked it. They thought it was evocative, but they didn't want to lose SEO to actual churches, hence the V.
Yeah, that's smart.
There's also a sort of like micro genre called Witch House, which is like chopped and screwed hip hop beats and grungy synths with like occult vibes all throughout that they were also kind of into, which the V was sort of referential to. Lauren Mayberry did an interview where she said, we did consider putting upside down crosses at either end of our name, but that would have dated us, I think. So if you've heard one of their songs, it would probably be The Mother We Share, which was like their big breakout hit here in the States, and like basically launched them into the States. They did South by Southwest like a few years in a row and took home like all these awards from doing those shows. But their favorite album of mine came out in 2015, and it's called Every Open Eye. And every song on this album, it just like just rips. Like it just hits that super big 80s synth sound. And it has the most danceable like hooks imaginable. I got to see them in concert a few years ago. It's the only concert I think I went by myself because we had tickets and I think you were like very pregnant with Henry and just didn't want to go. And so it's the only concert I ever went to by myself and I was all nervous, but I had a fucking great time because the music was just so fun and the audience was really into. And my favorite song off that album is called Clearest Blue, which I'm going to play right now. What I really, really like about Churches is how like steady they are, how reliable they are. Like they are really good at making this kind of music. And unlike a lot of other like artists and bands that I really like who make stuff I really like and then take big swings away from it to like experiment with other stuff, which is totally their prerogative. And I would never be like a dick and say like, just play the hits. Churches like just continues to kind of hammer down on this synth pop genre that they have proven that they are really, really, really good at making. What they explore instead are like different like themes and like lyrical ideas and inspirations for the songs, which range from so Graves was the unlikely theme song to the latest season of Terrace House. In Japan, in America, we got another sort of like extreme music like not knockoff, that's a mean way to talk about the music, but it wasn't, they don't do licensed music like they do in Japan where they had the Taylor Swift, We Are Never Getting Back Together for like the first season of Terrace House, and that song is about like gun violence in American schools. So it's like watching, you know, 20-somethings in Tokyo trying to find love to this song. But the song I want to play now is off their 2018 album, Love is Dead. It's called Graffiti, and it's all about just like the slow dissolving of ill-fated young love. But it like is a bop. So I'm going to play it now.
Waiting for my
Yeah, I just really like them. Like, they're never the first band that comes to mind when I think about my favorite bands, but, like, when I think about how almost every musical artist that I like has made, like, a whole album that I just didn't care for because it wasn't kind of what I wanted from them. Like, Church is just bangs out really, really good synth pop shit. Like, every album that they make has a bunch of bangers on it. And I really like having a band like that that I'm a fan of.
Yeah, it's nice to have a band like that, too, where you will kind of fade out for a few years and then you return and you say, I wonder what they've done while I've been gone. And you love everything universally.
And it launches. It's like, for real, that's happening right now where I was like, yeah, listening to music for this. And I was like, wait a minute, they're fucking great. And so I just have been going back through all their albums and listening to it again. If you've never listened to Churches, they rule. Just don't forget about that tricky V. Don't just search Churches in your music listening program of choice, because you'll probably find, I don't know, some sermon podcasts. I don't know what else is on there. Do you want to know what our friends at home are talking about?
Yes.
Mary says, something I appreciate every day is how considerate other parents are in the parking lot of the daycare I take my daughter to. Without fail, everyone leaves an empty space between cars to make it easier to load and unload kids. Parking lots tend to be stressful and weirdly competitive places, so to see such a consistent and thoughtful cooperation is wonderful. I do miss this.
Oh, yeah.
Henry's not back in daycare, but we had him in a couple for a couple years there. And it always was weird. Like, I think it's honestly more like, I don't want to make myself the asshole of the whole student body by, you know, being a jerk during drop-off.
Yeah. No, I've never really thought about that, but it's true. I remember that fondly of just like, oh, I have so much space here to pull my child who may or may not want to be here out of the car.
And also, like, if somebody's like pulling out of the parking lot, like, I'm always super slow to like, yeah, please, you go ahead. You go ahead, because we're going to see each other again. Our kids might end up being best friends, so I can't burn you right now. One more from Braxton, who says, one thing that I find wonderful is that since working from home, I get to see the garbage truck come by our house every week. I'm always amazed to see the speed at which the drivers can line up their trucks with the cans, and it's quite fun to see the robot arm shake the cans midair. It reminds me of what it felt like to see those big machines go by as a kid. I mean, those big machines didn't have the wild robot arms that they do now.
I got to tell you, I am very thoughtful to the distancing between cans because of that robot arm.
Yeah.
I think a lot about it. I have a lot of say in the placement, I would say, because I tend to be the one to remember to bring the trash out. And I'm very thoughtful. Like, I actually in my head try and create 6 feet in my mind so that I can give enough space for that robot arm.
See, I put them close together. And you know why? Because I'm cyberpunk as fuck. And I'm fighting the system.
This is the system.
The AI garbage eaters that are taking away our freedoms one by one. And you think about it and you're like, ha ha, Griffin, very funny joke for another one of your funny podcasts. But here in a few years, when, what next? Recycling trucks come by mm-hmm. to eat up all our bottles and cans. Mm-hmm. And then what happens next?
When the garbage trucks are all of a sudden doing your eye exam for
doing
you.
Doing our eye exam.
Just opening your lids and, then what's, turning them.
What's that coming down the street now? It's the free thought truck. Here to scoop up my liberties and dump them right in the back, crush them down into a little cube.
Putting the cans close together should solve that.
Uh-huh.
I feel like you've got it right there. You figured it out. No hacking involved. Just put those cans close together.
Oh, there's a little bit of trash hacking, if you know what I mean. I put little viruses in an old can of soda.
Oh, okay, okay.
So that when the truck eats up the old soda.
That's a funny joke right now.
It gets the... Well, no, I don't mean like sickness viruses. I mean computer viruses. Jesus. Anyway, somebody's not a console cowboy in cyberspace. Thanks for listening. And thanks to Bowen and Augustus for the use of our theme song, Money Won't Pay. You can find a link to that in the episode description.
And thank you to Maximum Fun for hosting our show.
Yeah. You want to talk about cyberpunk. There's nothing more cyber or punk than this amazing group of podcasts.
We should talk about shows.
Yeah, Triple Click is real good. A lot of video games happening right now. I'm sure they have way more salient thoughts about the Cyberpunk 2077 video game than I could generate. So.
I actually meant live shows.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, shit, as long as we're at it, though, Stop Podcasting Yourself is a really good show.
You know I love that show.
I know you do. Literally every time I walk by you when you're doing some errand or chore, you are listening to Stop Podcasting Yourself.
Stop Podcasting Yourself and Jordan Jesse Go are both right on that 666 episodes.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah.
There's a lot of podcasts. There's the Giant Bombcast, another podcast I listen to. They just hit 665. So, like, I guess all these shows started at the exact same time and are all about to hit the... Do you think that that's the apocalypse going to happen? The pod...
You got a lot of theories over there today, Griff.
The podcast lips. Oh, no. Okay, anyway, we have a bunch of shows coming up. December 19th.
And you can still get tickets
for
Candle Nights.
Candle Nights are a Candle Nights charity special. You can find tickets at macroy.family or I think themacroy.family. There's a lot of ways to get there. And me and Rachel have very brutal fights about this every episode. And we've gotten a lot of complaints that it's getting hard to listen to. But yeah, we have a bunch of special guests and all the shows got together to make a very fun holiday special.
This is a holiday spectacular to end all holiday spectaculars.
Well, holy shit. I mean,
I'm really going to oversell it because I think it will deliver.
Okay. Well, it's tickets are $625 and all that goes to charity. It's pay what you want with a minimum donation of $625. And then you get to watch this fun thing. We have so many guests and
skits,
friends,
and sketches,
and you're going to like it. And then me and Rachel are doing a wonderful live show the week after that, I think.
Yeah, so it is December 29th.
Mm. Yeah, 9 p.m. ET. Wow, we're really cutting it close. We're really banking on Henry not waking up during that special.
I know. We may want to set up a backup plan for that.
Like what?
I don't know. We have the one person that's allowed in our house come sit in our house.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. So tickets can be purchased at macroy.family, and they're $5 each, and all that goes to benefit Austin Bat Cave.
Yeah, so Austin Bat Cave, much to the chagrin of a lot of bat enthusiasts, is actually a writing program for young people. They go out into the schools. Lately, they've been offering a lot of online programming, but it is all to nurture the creative talent of young people.
It's a really, really great organization.
It's a cool... Griffin's been involved for years, and I just kind of got on board to literally get on the board.
Yeah.
And I've just been really impressed with the work that they're doing to really kind of, you know, support the growth of young people as they kind of find their voice and tell their story.
Yeah, that's very cyberpunk, too, if you think about it.
Okay.
I'm starting to realize I may not know what cyberpunk means, even though I just did a whole thing about it. Like when I use my phone and I do Apple Pay at the gas station when I'm buying like sweets and gummies for myself, mm-hmm. Is that cyberpunk?
Mm-hmm.
Is that when I use my card at the gas station machine instead of going inside and paying for the pump? That's cyberpunk, baby. Don't you think?
Mm-hmm. When I am at the grocery store and I'm dodging the ones and zeros.
Oh, man.
Is that cyberpunk?
Yeah, because they'll bonk you.
Yeah.
Won't they? For sure. When I'm at the library and I have to put on that headset that does the wires into my brain so that I can absorb all human knowledge at once. But then I say, no thanks, corporations.
Yeah.
And then they're like, this is a library? And I'm like, that's exactly what a corporation would say to me. That's a cyberpunk.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.